Welcome to the Evolution Exchange Nordic podcast. We're bringing together the best technical leaders from across the Nordics to discuss industry passions, challenges, and ideas. I'm Charlotte Roberts, and I help businesses thrive by connecting with top data freelance talent. And today, I'm your host. I'm joined today by Jacob with Archana, Caroline and Ravi as well. And of course, we're going to be discussing building and leading high performance data teams. So before we go into the actual questions then, if everybody would like to give themselves an introduction, and we'll go from there. So if Jacob, if you'd like to introduce yourself, that'd be great.
Yeah, sure. Hi, everyone. My name is Jacob, and I'm the manager for data analytics within ICA Banken.
Thank you very much, Jacob. Archana, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Yeah. Hello. I'm Archana, a senior engineering manager at Truecaller, where I lead the data infrastructure team. Truecaller is a caller ID and spam blocking app. And we are there in both iOS and Android.
Nice. Thank you very much for that introduction. Ravi, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure. This is Ravi. I'm right now heading the data and analytics in Schibsted, the news media side of it. So basically all the news brands. And my team main focus right now is to building the AI infrastructure for the news media. So I have a lot of cool people working with me, basically.
Nice. Thank you very much, Ravi, for that introduction. And Caroline, last but certainly not least, if you'd like to introduce yourself.
Thank you. Yeah, my name is Caroline. I'm currently at a company called Nielsen IQ. So I'm heading a commercial team of working with advanced analytics, looking into pricing and assortment and space and that type of work. Has worked a lot with the data and analytics team before, but now I'm a bit more commercial in this role.
Nice. Thank you very much, everybody, for your introductions.
Hi, everyone. This is Chris Bennett here, the Nordics Managing Director here at Evolution. We're committed to doing recruitment in a different way that adds value to both our clients and candidates by providing you with amazing speakers and leading edge discussions on what's going on in the tech scene at the moment. There are three reasons why you should contact me. If you would like to speak on a future podcast, if you are interested in hiring awesome tech, data, product or gaming freelancers for your business, or if you are looking for an exciting new organization to work with, please get in touch. Thank you so much for listening, and I really hope to hear from you soon. Please enjoy the rest of the podcast.
We'll dive straight into the questions now then. So the first question then is by Archana. And that question is, what are the things that you do as a leader to set your teams up for high performance? So if, Archana, if you'd like to start, and then I'll let everybody jump in.
Yeah. So the main intention of this question is pure curiosity and also learning. So I do certain things with my team to set them up for success. So I'm curious as to what others do and maybe learn. So yeah, that's the intention of this question.
I can put up my two cents here. So it kind of depends upon like the maturity of the team. So I can take an example of a team who might be mix of like very newcomers and experience, and each one of them kind of needs different way to make them grow, right? But one thing which is common across whatever kind of team setup you have is having a clear vision and strategy for the team. So I think like just setting that and making sure you are in line with the executive team and setting up those team contract, what we like to call it here, kind of helps a lot. So everybody kind of is aware where they are working towards. And then like basically setting up plans for each one to grow. If you're working in a data field, there are so many different variations. So having a career progression plan for like an analyst to a scientist to an engineer, that helps quite a lot, I would say, in terms of setting up them for success. And something very thing which can get overlooked is recognition and appreciation. So I have this like which goes a reminder monthly to our Slack channel saying that don't forget to appreciate somebody who might have helped you over the last month. So it kind of creates a good atmosphere. So that's a very high level of what I think, but yeah.
I really agree that setting goals and the vision is one of the most important things that you as a manager leader can do, because it's really important to set a very clear goal for the team so that we all know what we're striving to achieve. So that's one of the main reasons, I would say, in order to create a high-performing team. Besides that, I also think it's very important to work with the cultural aspect of the team to ensure that you establish a culture where there is trust, and you also work with empowerment of your co-workers. So I think those are some of the most important things that we are trying to work with when really working together as a team.
I can just say plus one on what Jacob and Ravi have said also, but one thing I also think in most of my roles, I've managed quite complex teams with a lot of different competences and capacities, and that can also be tricky because one person might not easily do another person's job, and then it's super easy to just understand what everyone contributes with, because some people it might be super clear what they contribute with because it's more hard facts or hard like things, but others might be less tangible or less easy to measure someone understanding a stakeholder need rather than writing a code. So just making everyone understand that everyone is needed and what the contribution of everyone is doing. So almost like a restaurant, we need to have someone getting all the ingredients, we need to have chefs, we need to have a kitchen, we need to have someone that waits on the tables and do the dishes and so on, that everyone has a role to play, and see how it all aligns, because I think that creates meaning. Otherwise it's so easy to not see what difference do I make or what difference do I make in the team.
Yeah, I agree. And that's why I feel like this whole recognition and feedback is so important, even though you have this nicely set up vision and processes. It's just recognizing each one's effort is quite important.
And I really agree with that as well. And also want to add that one part to ensure that is also to work with clear boundaries between different team members or co-workers, so that there is a very clear understanding of what is their mandate and what is their boundaries, and so that they can have the mandate to drive the team forward within a very certain mandate. So I think that is also very important.
That's a good point about boundaries, because otherwise if they're not clear on what their roles are, then you can have stepping into each other's work. So that's a good point.
Or becoming too passive because you're not sure, is this my job or is it someone else, or should I do it? I can do it, but is it my role? And I think that's also because usually I have very like high performing teams and achievers, but then it also needs to be clear.
Agree.
And one other thing that I think is interesting to discuss in this topic is also how to utilize the different ceremonies or the DevOps techniques into ensuring that you have a high performing team, because I've been into a lot working together with a lot of different teams, and there is always a variance in how we all use the different ceremonies. How do you prepare your sprint planning? How do you do the sprint requirements and so on? And I think as a leader, it's important to set guidelines and set some sort of structure into how to utilize the ceremonies, and then empowering the team to set their flavor of them in order for them to really ensure that they use the different ceremonies in the best way for the team, and then being there to support them if they ever feel the need for any support.
Yeah. And I feel like all these things are not like one-time thing where we set a process or a vision and you can just be done with it. So usually like the way I have been working with it is like, we work in tercile, so basically 4-month period. So before the start of each tercile, we go back, visit our team contract. By team contract, basically, I mean all of these things like visions, how do we do meetings and those things, and see what are the things we need to be changed depending upon what we're going to do in the next 4 months. So it's also about regularly kind of questioning your processes, asking people for the feedback, because sometimes as a leader, we can overlook something which might be bothering some of your team members. So having this feedback loop where they can bring up those points and you can reiterate on your process and improve it, I think that's add a lot of value. And that also makes them feel that they are part of this team, where they are not just doing what they're told, but they also have a voice where they can talk about stuff and we can discuss those things, I would say.
Yeah, some really good points there across the board. Well, we'll move on now to Carolyn's question. So Carolyn, your question is, in a team with lots of different competencies, how do you make everyone strive towards the same goal? If you'd like to give a bit of background behind this, and then I'll let everybody jump in.
Yeah, as I said earlier, I've been in the last places where I've been, I've had very, like my team members have had very diverse competences. And then I think it can be super hard to really get everyone to align around one common goal. And as I said, because then one person can't immediately do another person's job, and that might be unbalanced in the team because you might have super heavy work for certain competences, but less. So how do you manage that when you have very complex teams? How do you have any like tips or tricks on how to make everyone get collected around a common goal or the fireplace or whatever we call it?
You want to go? Okay. So whenever we set the roadmap, there's usually a session with the workshop within the team, and where there are different ideas that's coming, and you have to align it with the business goals, with the stakeholder goals. And even though there are like different competencies, but then each area has their own set of goals, but in turn, it's the total team's goals. And when you have this kind of workshop, I usually see that there is a buy-in from the team as a whole, because it's something you as a manager are driving it, but they are the one who is coming up with it. So there's a lot of commitment and buy-in to those goals. And then what I like to do is more like going back and thinking, how can I tie this to their individual goals? So it's like, what's in it for me kind of a question. So in one-on-ones, you know that some person want to increase their technical skills in some area, or someone is intrinsically motivated, but someone can be extrinsically motivated. So to find out those and to kind of connect with the goals. And each of them does this, like you have particular goal and then who is the one who's working towards it. So even though it's a collective goal, but then it's also, there's a progress with the personal goals and also the team goals together when you kind of connect it that way.
I mean, to be honest, like I feel it's a blessing if you have multiple competencies in the team. I mean, it could be challenging at times, but I really like those teams where you have different competencies. Right now, I'm working with a team which has people from, even though they are data people, a data scientist is very different from ML engineer. So just having those, I think if you can figure out if there are places where you need collaboration, a project, that's a very good way for making people involved. And that also gives us a chance where people, like I know some data scientist who wants to know more about the ML engineering part, but it will not be always the case. So I think that those kind of project and opportunity really helps. And obviously, as we talked about, I think this would be a recurring theme in this podcast, would be the unified vision, because even though we have like different competency, we are working towards one goal. And I always say that like we are not a family, we are a high performing team. And in a team, not everybody is doing the same, right? Take any sport. So everybody has their role to play. So long as they are going for that one goal, I think it's great to have a team which is like multiple competencies.
I really agree with that. And also really agree with that, the setting goals. So I also think the setting goals will be one of the key themes throughout this podcast. One thing that I would like to add is that when you have multiple different competences within a team, it is very important to really understand who are the individual behind the competence, so that you really can understand what are the respective different individuals' long-term goals and how they want to evolve within their competence. So you as a manager can support them in driving their long-term development as well, so that they can have learnings and ensure that they have progress as well. Because my experience is that if you work with the individual, also not only working with what they're trying to do within the workplace, but also work on the learning and development, that can also help in building the team together. so that you can then bridge competences from maybe one competence area to another one. If there is so done, like for example, if a data engineer wants to move over more into machine learning, into machine learning areas and so on. So then you can have different competences work across the different competences as well. So that's something that we try to strive for as much as possible.
Yeah. Like if I have to summarize, I would summarize this as like, it's a blessing. Trust me, I've worked with homogeneous teams and cross this, like it's a blessing. I would pick that any day.
I'll bring that with me. Yeah. No, but I agree. And I really like what all of you said, but also like connecting both the common goal to personal goals. I think sometimes that can be the tricky part because it might be so clear what the goal is or what the overarching goal or vision is. Sometimes that can be tricky.
Maybe we should move to the next question, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, we're firing through these questions already. So I'll move on now to Jacob's question. So Jacob, your question is, how do you ensure productivity and efficiency when resources are changing within the team? So if you'd like to give a bit of background behind this question, and then I'll let everybody jump in.
Yes, so the background for this question is that we are now in an establishment phase of our cloud journey. And in that journey, we have used a lot of consultants, and now we are in a transition phase, moving from consultants over to more of an employee-based. And that means that a lot of people are transitioning in and out from the team. So the background is that, how do you ensure productivity when you are exchanging a lot of different, both the roles and competences within a team?
I can go with this. So like, to be honest, like the whole thing starts even before you have change of teams. It has to start before it. And I have learned that hard way in places where you go in and you have like change of resources or you have a new team. So I think just making sure you have all those, I'm talking now more about technical things and all those. So if you have built a system or anything, and if you have change of resources, making sure that everything is well documented and you have a proper plan for those knowledge sharing session would help a lot. And this is something you have to do in advance. It's very difficult to do it when somebody is already changing role or moving out of for different reasons. So that's one thing. It also depends why there is a change. If it's a natural move, or as you said, like, then it's, I think, easier to handle than say, if it's due to a reorg or something, then it adds additional factor about uncertainty and everything. And then you need to work on that part. Apart from your technical knowledge sharing and handover, you have to make sure the people who are staying in feel comfortable and they are not like worried about their job and all those things. So having those regular check-ins with them, trying to be as informative and sharing as much as you can with them and keeping them informed helps at those positions. So it kind of depends why that change is happening. If it's a natural, I think it's easier to maintain. But if it's because of any reorg or anything, I think it adds the human element to it, which we should take care of.
And I think, I mean, in most cases, when regardless if it's an organizational change or if you're leaving or moving ahead in your career or whatever you're doing, I think there will always be a bit of a productivity loss, even if you have a very well structured and so on in the team. So I really also think that you should then plan for that and be open both to stakeholders and to everyone, so that you are transparent. But I agree with you, Ravi, that the more we have documented and framework and structure in place, and also have definitions of done, agreed, or have clear user stories. I mean, the more clear everything can be, not just what we've done, but also why we're doing it, then it's easy to get into the business or to understand, okay, why am I doing this, or why are we doing this, or how far have we come, and also be. So even if it might feel dry and boring, to have like the framework and the structure and the processes and everything clear and open and transparent to everyone, but also then allow for some periods where productivity might give room for something else. It might even be good because someone else comes in with new angles and new questions, or why did we do it this way, or what we did. And sometimes it might be, yeah, we did it this way because, and it makes sense. And otherwise it might be a small tweak or change and so on. So I think you shouldn't be that afraid of losing speed a bit, because it might also be a good moment to stop and like reflect on what we're doing. Are we going there right way.
I
second that, that you expect that the performance is going to dip. And so there are these five stages of team formation, norming, forming, storming. I'm probably saying it wrong, norming, storming, forming, performing and adjourning. So whenever someone new comes in, there's a dynamics that's going to change. And I think when a new person comes in, they're trying to figure out what is the team doing and what is my role that I have to do. So usually I kind of have 30, 60, 90 day plan, which kind of helps like where they figure out what are the team goals and what are their expectations. And they also see what is the gaps that they need to close in these days. So having that sort of a plan and daily check-ins, not daily check-ins, but usually frequent check-ins. And to ensure that even there might be some person who has to mentor them, and the productivity of that person is going to go down when they're mentoring this new person. So calculating all this and keeping in mind that it is going to dip, even though we do certain things, but to expect that it's going to happen.
Yeah, true. Because I remember, like, I was in a situation where I had, like, I was joining the company, four people were leaving, and I had a totally new team to take care of. So, like, meanwhile, when they are leaving, I had to hire people, I had to do a knowledge sharing. But the good thing was they had a pretty good documentation. That helped quite a lot. Mm-hmm. And, like, doing small things, like recording those knowledge sharing sessions after taking permission from them. So, because when you are doing those sessions, you get so much information that you can't absorb all of this. So if you have those recorded session, you can go back to them and just look at that part, kind of helps. These are very operational things, not that fun to do, but I think these small things do help quite a lot in terms of like how you want. So slowly you will start creating your knowledge base, and it's even now when we have people who have worked for some time, they do go back to that knowledge base because you don't remember everything all the time. So you can go back to knowledge base, figure it out and come back instead of wondering about it. So.
I also want to add one more thing. Like, I mean, all these are like documentation, keeping a lot of technical stuff. But other than that, I think psychological safety also matters. So somebody who's coming in, they have to be accepted well. Otherwise, they're still trying to figure out, how do I fit in here? Can I say this thing? Or what will the other person think? So faster that is, I guess they will move on to performing faster, and the team vibe is going to get better. So that's also like we as leaders can do certain things to make sure that they feel welcome and they are accepted and they are able to speak, not just listen.
Go ahead, Jacob.
I also agree with that in full. And one other thing that I think that is very important is also to work a little bit more on the culture aspect of the team, so that you ensure that. Because when you have new joiners or when a larger part of the team that are leaving, the culture will shift in a bit within the team or the team structure. And that's why I think it's very important that you as a manager really focus on building up the team culture and building up the psychological safety within the company as well, in order for the team to feel safe and also to ensure that the culture is kept in similar aspects as it were before the new team members joined.
Yeah. I think like the ceremonies play an important role. I was also in that situation. A lot of people changed in the teams and everyone was new, and there were a lot of knowledge transfer and so on that needed to happen. But what we did then was that we really looked into our ceremonies and also changed the settings of the ceremonies. So everyone needed to share how their morning had been and so on. And from the beginning, it was a bit awkward because they hadn't done that in the team. They had worked together for such a long time. So they didn't really, everyone needed to have the camera on, everyone needed, because that was a good way to get to learn, to get to know each other. So from the beginning, the first 2 weeks, I was like, oh my God, this is so awkward. But then, you know, suddenly something started happening and people invited each other to each other's lives and so on. So it was so good to move, even if it only took like 5 minutes, it gave so much value, because then everyone started on the same page for each day. So we really forced this awkwardness on people, but it takes a lot as a leader also to like stick into it and to be confident and to like feel that this, and we have a lot of different cultures and so on, so that's also a bridge to overcome, but to really like trust the process and have to be like stand out in awkwardness to make everyone feel safe and that it's a safe place to ask questions. Another thing we did was also that we gave new people, we did a list with some quick wins so that they quickly could start doing small things so that they quickly could feel that like they contributed. So they weren't given the biggest thing in the backlog, but small things so that that they could like quickly get into the business and solve some things, because that builds confidence. So like almost the things you never get to in the backlog because they are small, but you never have time for it because it's a super good way to get into it.
Never have able to get my head around culture word in a like a team setting, because if somebody asks me like what is a team culture, it's very difficult, but it's always easy for me to define what is our working principles in a way, and that kind of, and I've seen like the same people having different culture in a way, right? So when you're new, you're quite formal, then you become open, and then you're joking about it, then you're roasting each other to like, so I don't like, that's why it's very difficult for me to, but setting those ground rules and not in terms of just like working things like this is our sprint or not, but also setting some like very basic things. It's like how you operate in a meeting room, how do you operate when you have a conflict and those things. So, but yeah, I've never been around to wrap my head around what is culture in such a small setting. Culture is very big for me in that sense. And I have people from like 7 different cultures as such. So just setting those working principles has worked with me. So just like a different thought on it.
We also have like the norms, like how do you communicate, how do you make technical decisions, what happens when you do conflict, but I think, I mean, other than that too, but we also have this one fika thing once a week where you just talk. I mean, because I have people from Poland, India, and so it's not everybody sitting in Stockholm, it's there everywhere. So it's kind of nice to have that one time that we talk about the other person's life, or sometimes we just play games. There are a lot of fun virtual games. So it's kind of fun. So that way they get to talk something else.
Yeah. And I guess now I think we are going off topic, but this is also a very good thing, where it's like you want to open up your team, but at the same time, you have a lot of people who are very introvert and they really don't want to do it. So it has to be a nice balance of things where they don't feel like they should not feel out of the team if they are not contributing to those chats or like discussion, because there are people who are just like very extrovert and they would take up a lot of space. So yeah, I think it's like a different topic on its own, but it's a fun challenge to solve.
And I agree. I think that the time spent that is not focused on the actual work tasks, or it's maybe the most important time out of all the time, because that's when you really build the team and you build the team together rather than just focusing on delivering some sort of deliverable. So I also try to spend as much time outside of the office as in the office with the team, so that we really can get to know each other better. And that is, if you have the fortune to have everyone within your team sitting in the same place. We also have teams that are spread out as well, so it's not always possible. But when you have an opportunity, I really like that time.
And I actually don't think it's too far off topic either, to be honest, because I think I read somewhere the other day that if you genuinely get on with the people that you work with and the people that you're surrounded by, you're actually more effective within your work as well. So it's definitely a good point to bring up. It's good to get to know people on a personal level as well as a more business level as well. So yeah, some really interesting stuff there. But we'll move on now to Ravi's question. So Ravi, you've asked, what strategies do you employ to ensure effective communication among data scientists, engineers, and business stakeholders? If you'd like to give a bit of background behind your question, and then I'll let everybody jump in.
I think we discussed it quite a bit in another question, but the thing is, because I'm part of a big organization where we have multiple data teams, it's kind of makes sense to be aligned, but not all the time your team wants to talk to different teams and like trying to stakeholder, because at the end of the day, you're trying to solve a business goal and you want to be aligned with the business or the other teams, or even in your team, you want to make sure that your data scientist is aligned with your engineer who's building the platform for them. So what have you been doing? It would just be interesting to listen to that.
For us, like, we are the data infrastructure team. So we have a lot of data teams using the infrastructure. So it is like very important that whatever we do, they get affected. So we have bi-weekly technical meeting with the data scientists, analysts, engineers, where we say like what are the things that we've been working on, and if they have something, they come up. And there are also certain things that we want them to do because we are kind of dependent on them too. So for example, Spark2 has to be decommissioned or something like that. But then I also have a parallel session with the people who prioritize, because in the end, this technical session is with the devs, but they don't play a role in prioritizing. So there's also another one which can be with the managers or the POs, so where they know what's their expectation. And other than this, we also have Slack channels where it's like the announcement channel. Every day we do certain things if it's impacting them. So there are Slack channels that goes and like every day or maybe once in 2 days, if we do something, if it impacts them, so we communicate there. So what I've realized is the more you communicate, the lesser it feels like. There's always someone complaining. So yeah, I think more communication is better rather than lesser communication.
I really agree with that, and also want to add that one part where I think that has been successful previously is to try to mix as many competences as possible to solve some tasks. And because it's really when you work in a cross-functional team that the team members themselves start to understand how important it is to communicate in a different way than they are used to. And because I've been working with home and tennis teams before, we have almost only data engineers or developers, and they have been talking in one way. And then when you bring in like a data analyst, or you bring in some stakeholder from a business team, then the conversation becomes totally different, because then the developers can't really just talk in code. They need to explain it in a different way, because the stakeholder does not read code. So it's important. It's important for them to understand what they are developing. So I think that's one really important part to bring people together and to showcase it from different perspectives and different aspects. That's very important in how to build a really strong communication as well.
And also to assign ownership. That's what we've done. We've also had like business translator roles or that types of roles. And I think that can be super good just in order for everyone to understand that everyone, as you say, doesn't speak code, or everyone doesn't speak the commercial language or the, but I think that's also, if you have very clear user stories of what are we going to achieve with this one? So why do we want this code? What's the end goal? Again, I mean, a common vision and strategy, this is the end goal. Code-wise, we need to do it this way, but commercially, we need to communicate this way. But I also agree with you, Ashiana, that I mean, the more we communicate, the more we're clearer, or if we're late or we don't understand, and also question, or now we have two routes we can do. If we do it this way, then load times take longer, but if we do it this way, something else happens. I mean, if we can try to like communicate what are the pros and cons with different methods and so on, and not, I think, just try to explain what different options, what they will result in. I think just to train everyone to think about the context and not just see their small part of the journey, but also understand if I do it like this, if the model stops, what will happen then, and so on, just so that everyone understands their piece of the puzzle. But it's tricky. I mean, the communication is not easy. But also to have clear channels also. This is where we log the incidents. This is where we, so everyone also knows who to turn to or where to go if they want an answer or if they want to report something and so on. I think that's also makes it easier so that you not have everything in a long Slack channel or Teams channel or even in a meeting. I mean, to find a good structure also for where you communicate what type of information, but also who communicates which type of information.
Yeah, I think like, the ownership part makes a lot of sense, given that if you have the ownership of things. So yeah, thanks a lot.
And one other thing that I could add to this topic is also that using demos has been really effective, because that has also opened up for communication between different user groups or different competences. So we've worked quite a lot with demoing for various stakeholders, or both stakeholders and technical teams. That could also help to lower the gap between the no coders and coders, to open up the communication and also bring in new requirements from doing the demos. So that's also been very interesting.
Nice. Well, we've got some time now for a few extra questions. So Jacob, you asked an extra question, which was how to leverage the mix of employees and consultants when leading and building a high performance data team. So yeah, if you want to maybe give a bit of background and then I'll let everybody jump in.
Yeah, sure. So it's almost quite similar to the first question that I asked, but it's in a little bit of a different context. The context is that I think that it's important to have a mixture in the team between both employees and consultants, because I think that the two different groups have different values. I think that consultants can be quite fast on joining and delivering some sort of specific result, and can also bridge some sort of knowledge gap that we might not have internally. So I think that's could be very helpful. But I also think that it's important that you have the right balance in the team, so that you don't only have consultants or only have employees, because I think that there is some added benefits from having a balance within the team. And I'm very interested to hear your thoughts on that as well.
Yeah, I think like for me, the one basic principle for hiring a consultant is the job more than a year. If not, then I'm like looking for a consultant. If I know it's a multi-year project, I would try to hire an employee and get those skill set. And also the urgency of it. Usually sometimes it's faster to get a consultant than an employee. So these are very practical reasons, obviously. But usually the best place for me, and I have been also consultant for a big part of my life. So one place where I see a lot of value brought by consultant is, I think you mentioned, is something which the team lacks about knowledge, or it could be a tool or a technology where a consultant could come in, maybe upskill the team, they can learn from it, and then that's where the assignment gets over. So anything which requires like an extra knowledge or something which needs a leader where we are lacking that in the team, that's where I feel like consultant are the best. But anything which I see is a long-term thing, I usually try to get an employee, because I want somebody to take it from scratch to end and not leave it in the middle, kind of.
Yeah, I think it's always a balance, as you say. Usually if you take in consultants, it's because you have a knowledge gap or something that you want to, but you also don't want the consultants doing all the like exploration and that, because it might be that it's a way for your team to grow. So a balance in between is probably the best, or if they can come in and do a certain part, or it could be if you have the old platform and the new one, maybe consultants can maintain the old platform, because it's not so fun to maintain a system that you know is gonna be sunset, for example. But I think the best is when you can learn from each other, because they usually when you take in someone from the outside, it's because they know something that you don't have internally, at least not at that moment. So it can also be a good knowledge transfer session.
Yeah, I agree with both of you. In the past, where I've used consultants is when you're not able to hire data engineers in Sweden, because it's very difficult to get and you cannot wait longer, and that's the time gone to the contractors. We've had a lot of imbalance, like there were a lot of contractors and not many employees, but now the ratio is better. But there's also another team that I'm building, and for that, the way I see it is like contractor comes and does, like it's a time boxed for 6 months, and then when everything is set up, then I'll try to get the employees slowly and then knowledge share and mentor this data engineer. So something like that. So yeah.
I think it's a good point to mention that a consultant should not just come in, do his or her work and leave, right? So which is the most important, that it gives the employee also the opportunity to maybe upskill or try to understand what they brought. So it should not happen in this black box of things. So yeah, that's something we have to take care of while working with consultants.
You know, I also agree with that. And I think that is very true. And besides that, I also think that it's important that when you have multiple consultants in a team, that you also ensure that the consultants don't only work with other consultants, that they work in that, so that you try to mix it up, so that you have consultants working with employees and employees working with consultants too, in order to ensure that there is a competence transfer or knowledge transfer between the consultant and the employee, so you can build up your internal team as well. Because otherwise, there is a risk of just having consultants doing a job or doing a part of deliverable, and then they are leaving, so, and they have not really added that much value back to the team.
Yeah, true.
Interesting. We've got one final question now then, which was from Robert. We have touched on this a little bit, but how do you balance technical expertise with soft skills in your team selection?
I can give some background about it. So like whenever I'm hiring, and I've done this quite a lot over the last 1 year, is you can gauge the technical skill quite well in a way. I think it's easier than our soft skills. And by soft skill, I mean like how they interact with other people in the team, or how they're going to interact with the stakeholder, how they operate in a social structure, because that could bring down like whole energy of the team, even though they might be the best developer in the team. And that's always very tricky to judge in like your 1 hour interview. So I just wanted to check, how do you evaluate that?
There are some questions that I generally ask. And I mean, for me, a good attitude is better than technical skills. I feel like technical skills you can always learn, but the person doesn't have the attitude to learn, or, you know, passive aggressive, that doesn't work. So just asking questions and seeing how the person is. Let's say there's some technical skills the person doesn't know, but is he or she is open to learn? Do they have the attitude to learn? Because right in this age, you will never find perfect fit for your role. So all those kinds of just asking certain questions, like what are your strengths, weaknesses, and how would you do in this situation? Giving some situational questions. I guess that's how I do it.
I do the same, more add in also some, not just, we usually have different sets of interviews, so maybe more technical for the task, and like if you're an engineer or work with ML or whatever, so we have, you meet some of the people you're going to work with, but then we also usually have some more other people that also work with this group in the interviews, and they're also asked some more competence-based questions in a situation questions, just as you say, but in certain types of situation, can you give some examples on how you worked or reacted, just in order to get the view of, okay, but how do they have any examples on how they interact with others and so on. So depending on what's important for that role, we try to add in some competence-based or situational-based questions, just in order to hear how they talk of that type of situation, or how they are communicative. So even if they are introvert, can they make a point? Are they clear in communication and so on, to get that flavor? And I totally agree with you. I mean, attitude is king here. So are you curious to learn, or have you challenged yourself and maybe switched careers or done something new? Or have you done, because then you have an openness to learning and to challenging yourself and so on. But I guess it also depends on what type of role it is, but I think best teams are, as you said before, it's the one that are very diverse, because that's when you really can build on each other's strengths and learn from each other, even if it might be painful sometimes and not always a bliss.
And I just wanted to add that one other perspective to really think about when you do recruitments is to ensure that the mix of people within the team is in some sort of balance, so that you don't have too many that are extrovert or introvert, or and that you really have some sort of balance. And that could be tricky because for us, you know, some roles, there are not that many talented people out there. So it's not that easy to, you know, like pick and choose. So that's what I try to think of that as much as possible to try when building a team, trying to have people that are matching and people that are challenging others within the team as much as possible, so that we don't have a too homogeneous team or group, because that's usually easier and it also usually challenges the team members across the team as well.
Yeah. So I think these are all good points, and I do agree that attitude and like that matters more than in terms of like technical skill. Obviously, you have to have some technical skill. I'm not saying that you can't even code and I'm going to hire you. That's also not going to work. But also, like, sometimes I get a bit cynical about it, and I don't have an answer for it. So I'm just expressing my thought. It's like, I can learn about those scenarios before interview, right? So I can learn about what are the challenging strengths and I can fake it in interview. So that's one scenario. Second scenario is the more you learn, the more you get to know that, the less you know. So I learned something about unconscious bias. So whenever I'm like hiring somebody, I have my biases about people, right? And I'm kind of reflecting my biases on them. So you might end up hiring somebody because each personality gets attracted to a certain kind of personality. There has been psychological studies and everything. So you might kind of choose people you get along with in a way, which could be a tricky part. So I feel like I don't have the answer to it right now. I try to be as objective about it as I can. And I think I involve a lot more from my team because so it's not my decision, but like I let them meet different people from my team and we gather everyone's feedback without sitting in the same room. So everybody writes their feedback and then we see the feedback. And sometimes you can see the surprise where feedback of one person could be so different from another person. But I don't have like a good solution for it now, but I think it's one of the tricky part of leading a good data team, because like one bad hire can spoil your like years of work.
Interesting. I'm actually going to throw in one final question. And I know I said that was going to be the last one, but I was just thinking then I think it'd be good to end on this one. So I just want to ask each one of you, and I'll let whoever wants to jump in first jump in. But is the one, or what would you say is the one key sort of skill that you need as a leader to build and lead a high performing data team? So I'll throw it back to you now, but anybody who wants to jump in first, just think of sort of one key skill that you say that you need as a leader.
Context and clarity. I know you said one. You should be able to give context to the team and provide more clarity as to why they're working towards something. Otherwise, they are doing something, but they don't know why. You can't motivate them. So context for me.
Nice. Love that.
Okay, I can go. I hate silence. So that's why you'd see me jumping. Like, that's my weakness. I think like that's a great point. But one thing is like empathy is a very important thing for you as a leader, which doesn't come in any handbook as such. But like the most of the good leaders I had, and I'm reflecting on my experience, are the one who had empathy about the situation. So they, like, if you have empathy, you would make sure things are prioritized, you would make sure things are clear, and would not expect your employees to just do things because they are paid to do it, right? So having this human decency of empathy can make you a good leader. And I really don't like the title manager. I don't think we are managing them. I think we are mentoring them, maybe, but that's just me. Yeah.
Nice.
I would like to build on that, because I also think that empowerment is one of the key and traits or skills to really work with empowering your coworkers or your colleagues in order for them to really strive and be the best version of themselves. And besides that, also work with coaching. So that, because I believe that I agree with you, Ravi, that it's not only like pointing out a direction and then giving them like a direct ticket or anything to work with. You need to really ensure that they understand what they are doing, why they are doing it, and how they should to do it so that they can blossom in their way. So I try to work as much as possible with coaching them or empowering them, and of course within a certain boundaries or mandate, because otherwise things can go a little crazy.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's about managing expectations. So this is what I expect of you. This is what you can expect of me. What do you expect of me? So that everyone is clear. I mean, I have expectations. They have expectations. We have expectations from the business. So really like managing expectations and understanding why they're important, but also inviting them to let them, I mean, what do they expect? What do they need help with? What, how can I remove barriers and so on? And I used to say that, like as a manager or a leader, you shine if the team shines. So everyone is important. So, and also like communicating a we, not an I. but I think a lot is about expectations.
Makes sense. Yeah. Oh, I love that. Before we end the podcast, I'd like to say thank you so much to all of our guests for sharing their thoughts in today's conversation. If you are hiring for a new technical role or looking for new roles, feel free to get in touch with us here at Evolution. Or if you or anyone you know would like to be featured on a future podcast, you can drop me a message too. I'm Charlotte Roberts, and you can find me on LinkedIn or email me at charlotte.roberts@evolution-nordics.com or visit us at evolutionjobs.com/essing. Thanks again to all our guests, and thank you for listening. We hope you can join us next time.